Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
6:34 on a Monday evening in Lansing. Thank you for joining us. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS. Well, the new National Registry of Exonerations assembled by the University of Michigan Law School and the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law, finding that in the past several decades, thousands of innocent people have been convicted of crimes that they did not commit, each of them serving an average of 11 years in prison. University of Michigan law professor Sam Gross is the editor of the newly opened National Registry of Exonerations, and he joins me now. Sam, thank you very much for coming on 1320 WILS.
My pleasure.
So, you know, look, every human system is bound to make mistakes. Our justice system is certainly one of them. In terms of percentages, though, is the number of wrongfully convicted prisoners an incredibly rare occurrence?
It's not incredibly rare. But we don't know how frequent it is. As you mentioned, we've located cases of over 2,000 people who were convicted of crimes and then later exonerated for the crimes that they were convicted of. But we have no idea how many people are convicted of crimes and not exonerated. And we have very clear evidence that the great majority of people who are convicted in error are never discovered and never cleared and serve out their time and try to put it behind them or perhaps die in prison. So we can't give you a number of how frequent it is. I don't think it's a high percentage. Obviously, I think the great majority of people who are convicted of crimes in this country are guilty. But we do have a steady trickle, perhaps a small stream of accidents, and these accidents are tragic.
So what kind of numbers did you find precisely then? How many cases were you looking at it, and how many cases did you find that were exonerated?
Well, we were looking at any case we could find in which we could determine that someone who had been convicted of a crime was then cleared of that conviction, the consequences completely removed on the basis of new evidence of innocence that wasn't presented at the time of conviction. And this is what we found, these cases. The problem with studying false convictions is that you don't know when they happen, unlike other accidents, traffic accidents or airplane crashes. There are no wrecked vehicles. There are no bodies strewn about. You know, a decision is made, and it's wrong, and it's a terrible tragedy for the people involved, but it's invisible because if you knew it at the time, it would never happen.
What kind of evidence, though, tell me, usually leads to these exonerations that wasn't presented during the trial of these individuals?
The type that's best known is DNA, of course. And if you ask most people what an exoneration is, the next word out of their mouth will usually be DNA because since 1989, when DNA started being used to re-examine convictions in cases in the United States, we've been able to prove with a high degree of certainty that several hundred people were convicted of crimes, almost mostly sexual assaults, some murders, a few other cases, weren't the people who did it because their DNA did not match the DNA of the person who was obviously the criminal. But those cases are a minority of the cases we found. Of the cases that we found are in two groups. There's a group of about 890 about whom we have detailed information that are in the National Registry of Exonerations, which is now available online. And then there are about 1,200 others that we know about that have been exonerated, probably more than that. That's a low estimate, but about whom we have sketchier information and mm-hmm. who were convicted under different circumstances. Those are group exonerations that we found out about after scandals in which we learned that police officers, not when I say we, I mean where the authorities learned that police officers were systematically framing innocent people for crimes that they hadn't committed.
I see. So a big portion of exonerations are actually the reason behind these convictions is actually purposeful acts by officials to get innocent people in prison.
Yes, for the group exonerations, which we weren't planning to collect information on them because it's a somewhat different type of problem and the cases are different, but we kept running into them, so we thought we would collect, devote some effort to collecting information on them, and were surprised by what we found out. I mean, for example, there was a large group exoneration in Michigan that I had never heard of in Benton Harbor. Over 70 people there were convicted of crimes, drug crimes, on the basis of false evidence by police officers who planted drugs on them, and then recovered judgments against the county. Those cases, and we came across 13 groups of cases like this from around the country, and most of them get relatively little attention.
Why is that? I mean, is there basically a desire by officials and municipalities and systems to maybe not draw attention to these accidents or even purposeful convictions?
I have no idea why they get as little attention as they do. There were stories about these cases. So the Benton Harbor cases were covered to some extent in Benton Harbor and in a nearby newspaper in Indiana. The biggest groupings are cases in Philadelphia. They have been covered by the Philadelphia papers.
I see.
But they don't get as much attention as you'd think they would, as you'd expect, considering the magnitude of the issues.
I'm talking to Sam Gross. He is a University of Michigan law professor and the editor of the newly opened National Registry of Exonerations. So, Sam, what about those folks who were convicted due to some kind of a mistake made, either by prosecutors, by witnesses? How does the process of them of new evidence and their exoneration, how does that usually begin then so many years after the conviction?
What usually happens in the cases that we know about, the ones are the typical ones, is that someone who's been convicted of a very serious crime, in most cases rape or murder, and who has protested his innocence, and 90% of these, more than 90% of these defendants are men, eventually get someone to pay attention and gather information that can persuade a court or prosecutors or both that he's innocent. That's one way. Another way is that the real criminal is caught doing a similar crime and then linked to the crime for which the innocent man was convicted by physical evidence or confesses to that crime.
Now, once officials...
You may remember, for example, in Lansing, the Claude McCollum case. He was convicted of a terrible rape murder at a community college and sentenced to life without parole. And then a couple of years later, a serial murderer and rapist was arrested for other crimes and confessed to that one as well. And after his confession, a fingerprint that had not previously been identified was determined to have come from the real criminal. So one method by which they're exonerated is that the real criminal was caught doing a similar crime or confesses to it, but that's very chancy. Every person who is unlucky enough to be convicted of a crime they didn't commit and then has the good fortune to be absolved because the real criminal is caught, there must be several for whom the second lucky event never happened.
So with all the thousands of cases that you looked at, did you come to any conclusions on what could actually keep wrongful convictions from occurring? I mean, is that not just something that unfortunately does happen sometimes in the criminal justice system?
Well, I don't think anything can keep them from ever happening. And as you said at the beginning, every system that is created by people is liable to error, and there will be errors. I think we can reduce the number of errors, as we have done in other areas. Over my lifetime, we've reduced the rate of errors in automobile accidents by a huge amount, by making cars safer and roads safer.
Well, where do you think the glaring problems are right now in the criminal justice system?
The things that could be helped?
Sure.
There are a couple that stand out. One is in eyewitness identifications. There are known dangers of misidentifications, and many of the cases here are errors that are based on eyewitness misidentifications. If careful procedures are followed, then those errors are less likely. Another is in confessions. It surprises a lot of people, but 135 of the innocent defendants in this group confessed or were said to have confessed to the crimes for which they were convicted and then later exonerated.
Mm-hmm.
If interrogations are recorded, video recorded, then it has been shown that the chances of making a mistake and convicting somebody on the basis of a false confession go down a lot, because then you know what was said and you can see and tell whether this was a confession that came from the defendant,
mm-hmm.
or something that was suggested by the interrogators.
About 30 seconds left. You didn't give me a number initially, but what is your guess? Wrongful convictions in the U.S., is it in the range of 1% or 2%?
Well, I can tell you that. I can answer that really quickly. We don't know. The best information we have is in the case of death sentences, of which we have none in Michigan, but in states where there are death sentences, we have much better information about those cases than any other criminal prosecutions. And among death sentences, the rate of wrongful convictions has been determined to be somewhere in the range from 2.5% to 5%, which strikes me as very high. But we don't know whether that applies to other cases.
University of Michigan law professor Sam Gross, the editor of the newly opened National Registry of Exonerations. Sam, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about Mark Zuckerberg and whether or not he signed a prenup and whether or not you should have a prenup signed before you decide to get married. And if you didn't, what is that going to mean to you if a divorce does occur? Well, we'll find out next. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.